Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, Rich. That was a very nice introduction. It is really great to be back at ApacheCon and also to see how many people are here for the first year. That's awesome. So my first ApacheCon was 15 years ago, not quite 20 years ago, the first one. And that was in Las Vegas, and I'd been to every ApacheCon in the U.S. and Europe for several years until something changed in my plans. And so that's what I'm going to talk about now. All right, so I was on the incubator PMC. I was on the board of directors, and then I think Sander here was the one who had this idea that maybe there should be a vice president of legal affairs, and me not being a lawyer ended up in that position. So so that was actually one of the main ways that I was involved in Apache back about 15 years ago, 15 years ago. So then one day I was giving a talk in Atlanta, and I decided to just walk around the city. And I walked right up to this. And so this is the grave of Martin Luther King Jr. And I just kind of stumbled upon it. And this was March 1st of 2006. And I suddenly felt really small, really tiny. And I felt like he wouldn't be as proud of me and what I was doing with my life as he could be. And so I was kind of thinking about the things I was doing in life and felt like there's something bigger. So it was really kind of this experience that that woke me up a bit. It didn't change me as a person. I was still, you know, same person, but just got very focused. And so this grave is in this nice reflecting pool here. There's a park around it with a statue of Gandhi and quotes from Gandhi and from Dr. King. And one of the quotes, there's a lot of great stuff there, but one of the quotes that got me was this one. So life's most persistent and urgent question is, what are you doing for others? And so I thought about that a bit, and I felt like I was doing some things for others. I think everyone here at Apache is doing things that's benefiting a lot of others. But for me, it made me feel like there was something more I needed to explore. So I spent the next six months or so just kind of thinking, what's important to me? What of all the issues in the world, what really mattered to me? What felt like the greatest injustice in the world? And so I thought about Monopoly. And now here's the thing about Monopoly, is that Monopoly, a lot of people know about this game, you start with a certain amount of cash. Everybody starts with the same amount of cash. Now, can you imagine if we, tonight, we ended up playing Monopoly and you sat down to play, you sat down to play with a few of us and we gave you $5, but everyone else got $500. And we said, okay, let's go. Let's see who wins. Everybody's got a good shot, right? We wouldn't play that game. We'd say, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. Why would we do that? But that's what we do on this earth. That's what we do when people are born into a part of the world with far, far, far fewer resources than many of the rest of us. And so, you know, coming from Apache and thinking about meritocracy, that idea of equity, of getting equal access to resources, it's so far out of balance that for me it was the thing that I felt like I've got to be part of changing something with this situation. So I wrote an email to Apache, which I found last night, and said, hey, sorry, I'm turning over my vice president of legal affairs work to Sam Ruby, and I'll be traveling without internet. And so a few people said, what's going on? No internet? That's pretty strange. So then I had to do a follow-up email that said, okay, you know, a couple of people have asked. I'm off to a remote region of Ghana to study health, education, and microcredit to address rural poverty. I don't want to bore anyone, but that's basically the thing. So now I'm going to explain this a little bit more. So this was July of 2007. So here's what I did. I went out to Ghana, and Rich gave me this nice introduction to say I went to Ghana to change the world, but it was definitely much more about I went to Ghana and Ghana changed me. I was able to understand the world a little bit more. So I went there out to this remote rural part of Ghana. So Ghana is in West Africa. And you could go to dozens and dozens of countries, and if you go to the right place in those countries, out to the more remote rural areas, you'll see a lot of similarities. So here's an example of people sitting under the big tree that's typically going to be around a rural village along the side of the road, and they're there and they're very interested in something. And what it is that a group of people with information about health came to talk to them. And so now these people are all farmers, and it was during the growing season, but it was so important they actually left their farm to learn about how they could take care of their children's health. So for instance, malaria in Ghana is a huge killer of children and pregnant women. In fact, in a lot of these countries, if you have a child, there's about between a 10 and 20% chance that one of your children is going to die by the time they reach age 5. And so this is the reality people are living with. And so if someone has some information about how you can prevent your child from dying, they're pretty interested. So now the problem is, people will say, well, one of the great ways of avoiding malaria is to use bed nets. But there's a few important things about that. If you drop bed nets into a village, people have to know how to use them and why to use them. Is it really important? So for instance, this example here, this gentleman needs to understand that the net needs to be tucked around you under the mattress. You can't have your arm poking out. You can't have holes in like big holes in the bed net, or the mosquitoes will go right through. It should be treated with insecticide. It shouldn't be leaning on your skin. So there's all these pieces of information about how to use a bed net, and the fact that the most important use of a bed net is not for your crops. It's not as a fishing net. It's not as many other things, but why not? Why is it really important? And so if people can hear opinion leaders in their own communities talk about the importance of this kind of thing, then that can convince them to say, maybe this is important. Maybe this actually can make the difference between whether my child lives or dies. So that was some of what I learned when I went out there back in 2007. So what I'll do is just going to give you a quick overview. I'm going to show you about a two-minute video. There was a news crew that came in. We won this award a few years back, and the prize was basically a really, really heavy thing I had to carry back from Doha. But more importantly, a video. And so I'm just going to show you a quick little video that some documentary crew did about what's going on.
A rural area in the upper west region of Ghana, where most of the people are farmers, undereducated and without access to electricity or mobile networks. The Talking Book is an affordable audio computer. It's a major source of information.
The Talking Book is one of the most robust devices that technological interventions that has been graced on the world in the past few years. It's a multimedia application that helps make relevant knowledge in agriculture and health available to people that live in rural places, people that are the hard to reach people in rural places.
Behind the audiobook program is the NGO Literacy Bridge, which partners organizations like UNICEF, CARE and MEDA to generate messages on agriculture and health. Information is created in the form of drama, song or an interview and transferred into the Talking Book. The gadget is powered by batteries and they are circulated between the communities and Literacy Bridge's offices where they are charged. Users navigate simple audio menus in any language and then listen.
So now I'm going to go to the Through the talking book, we've learned where to access fertilizer and how to apply it to our crops. Also, our farm animals used to die prematurely, but with the help of this device, we know now how to care for them.
The talking book is the only source of information on modern methods of agriculture and healthcare in these remote communities.
The talking book teaches us so many things, but in all, I'm much particular about the cholera that's come in Ghana this year. But due to these talking books, we have learned a lot, and we have made sure that the measures that we have put in place, we are safe from this cholera.
Talking Book allows its users to record feedback by a single click on a button.
Even with the user feedback,
with the user feedback statistics we have, the Talking Book is designed in such a way that people can record a message through that user feedback, letting us know what they are actually benefiting from in the Talking Book. And we can make the Talking Book available to every family and to extend the program to the whole Upper West, the whole Jurapa, or even the whole of Ghana.
Or even the whole Ghana.
Okay, so now you might have noticed that they referred to the organization as Literacy Bridge. So that was the name that we started with. We just changed it to Amplio in last year. Part of the reason is because when Rich mentioned, you know, things that I've learned along the way and that has changed what we are doing, well, it was my idea to invent some sort of piece of technology that could be useful for children in classrooms. So we had, and most of the classrooms are actually much more crowded than this. You're kind of seeing a little sub-classroom here. It's usually about 80 to 100 kids in a class with one teacher. And so I had this idea of really low-cost audio technology that would allow children to hear messages or hear books being read by their own teacher. And it would allow the teacher to kind of be in lots of places at once, in a way. So that was the idea. But when I went out into these communities and I met with everyone I could to understand issues of poverty, it was the people who were in health and who were in agriculture who said, wait a minute, I'm not a technology person, but let me understand. You're saying you want to create this audio device that could be very easy for people to use, even in villages without electricity. And they don't need to be able to read, and they could use it and play audio. And you want to do this in schools. Well, that sounds nice, but let me tell you what I would do if I had something like that. I would record everything I know that I try to teach people about farming. You know, or the health people would say, everything I know that are important for parents to know about taking care of their kids' health. And I'd put that on that device, and I would leave it in the village, because the problem is I can only get there maybe every couple years, 2 or 3 years. And when I get there, I've got all this knowledge to share, but the people there are in most of these villages are illiterate, and so they can't take notes. So can you imagine you're a farmer and someone says, okay, so you farm 4 different crops. Well, let me give you all this information about preparing your land and planting the seeds and how far apart should your seeds be, what month should you make sure you plant by, how do you harvest and weed and and how do you make fertilizer and store it and negotiate with a middleman in the value chain, all this kind of stuff. And someone's saying, what, okay, I think I got that part. You're coming back in 3 years? That would drive me crazy. So what they said was, if I could take all that knowledge and put it on a device like this, that's what I would do. So I said, well, we should probably try that too. So we did both things, and we saw a lot of great possibility in the schools. And but what we also saw was some pretty exciting things going on in the villages. So here's what happened. I don't know if you've ever heard this phrase that IQ is evenly distributed around the human race and around the world. Well, let me give you an example of this. Here's what this guy did. So this guy, his name's Felix. When we gave him a talking book that was loaded with content on agriculture, he did an A-B test. This guy had never been to school before. This was his idea. I wish I could claim credit for it, but he said, He said, you know what? Let's see if this works. I'm going to take my corn crop, and on half of it, I'm just going to plant the same way I've always planted, with the way my parents and grandparents taught me. And on the other half, I'll try all these different things. I'll try putting my chickens and my goats, I'll build a pen for them to stay in at night, because otherwise these farm animals are just all over the roads and everywhere. But I'll keep them in a same pen at night. And that will essentially allow them to poop, and I'll be able to pick it up, and it'll be all in one place. I'll be able to use this to create manure. I'll apply it just the right way. I'll build beds of dirt instead of little mounds of dirt. I'll space it the right way. I'll make sure I plant it in the right month. I'll do all these things, and let's see if it makes a difference. And that's the difference it made. So I took those photos, and I was blown away and really indebted to Felix that he was smart enough to try this out. This is the kind of thing, is that if you can get resources to people who are otherwise just don't have that opportunity, what great things can they do? So when we saw these kind of results, we said, well, we're a small organization. We've got to focus. We can't be doing some things in schools and some things with connecting people in villages with knowledge. And so we had to shut down the school program. So that was a tough call, but I feel like if you're going to do something, especially if you're doing something like a nonprofit, why not be the best in the world at what you're doing? And if you're not the best in the world, if you can't be the best in the world, why not support whoever is the best in the world? And so I felt like there's no way we could be the best in the world at two things, two very different types of things. So we dropped the school program and focused on this idea. So basically what hopefully you got from the video is it's about taking knowledge from local experts in the local language, recording that in an audio form. They're often speaking about agriculture or health behaviors. And then our focus is on the most vulnerable communities, people where they just are, they've got challenges that we can't even imagine and fewer resources than we could imagine trying to deal with it. And there are a lot of great organizations out there helping a lot of people who are in need, but our focus is really the ones that are the hardest to reach, are the ones that are often getting overlooked, because it's not easy to find ways around these challenges of no electricity and illiteracy in remote areas and extreme poverty. So people take these devices and they listen to them and they talk about these messages together. When they're farming, they're taking it out on their farms and listening to it together. And that's basically the idea. So now I just will tell you a little bit about the technology. I figured that you might be interested in what are the main pieces, how does it work. So so here's the device. Now I'm going to have a few of these on the Apache table. So if you're interested in looking at it later, or if you see me around at the reception tonight, I'll probably have one of these on me, and I'm happy to show you. But basically, this is the idea. So you see in the top right, it just runs off batteries, because in a lot of villages, you don't have electricity. We have a model now that has rechargeable batteries, so if someone has the ability to, like, charge a cell phone over a solar-powered charger or something like that, you can equally charge this just over the same USB connection. The issue is that a lot of the people who are most vulnerable in the world don't own their own phone. It's changing, but the access, and I mean, it's been changing for 11 years that I've been doing this, but there are no smartphones at all where we work. And then there often are some of these small, like, flip phones. But the people who have typically been disenfranchised the most, especially women, are not the ones that own these phones. So this is one of the reasons why I could tell you more about some of the issues with phones. But so it just runs with batteries. You can either use the small AA batteries or large D. Either will fit, but not both. And it basically just speaks to you in your language. So. Okay, so maybe it'll be helpful if I give you an English version. So that's one version that's used, but here's a demonstration.
Welcome to the talking book. Press the right hand to choose a subject. Health. To learn about health, press the tree. To try another subject, press the right hand. Farming. To learn about farming, livestock. To learn about livestock.
So you get the idea, lots of different categories of information, and then if you go to health, for instance,
Queen Mother's speech on exclusive breastfeeding. My name is Queen Lady Rebecca Taktuta Dombo. I am the Queen Mother of Chirapa. I have 4 children, of which I have raised with exclusive breastfeeding for 6 months after birth. I have sister-in-laws and daughters who equally have children. My advice to them has always been to practice exclusive breastfeeding for 6 months.
So this is just one example. The issue is that, I don't know, how many of you are parents? Okay, good. All right, me too. So when I became a new parent, I didn't know that I shouldn't feed my daughter food on when she was born. I mean, I eat food. Why shouldn't she eat food when she was a month old? Or water even. So especially if you're out in a remote village where the water and the food are going to be contaminated, and small little babies can die from things like that. That's why they emphasize breastfeeding. There's not a lot of formula out there in these remote villages. But the thing is that that doesn't make any sense to someone who's like, what do you mean not feed water to my baby? You want me to starve my baby? That's crazy. And so you need to have these opinion leaders who can speak authoritatively to people who they can connect with. And also you want to use the kind of ways that people talk to each other in dramas or in songs. So here's a song. So this was a locally recorded song using a wooden xylophone because that's what people used in that particular area. And it's talking about why it's so important to use bed nets. So that's kind of the approaches. It's not just the technology, but it's getting the right content on that that works for people. Now, one of the key things is you'll see it's got a microphone for user feedback. That was one of those things that I think I wasn't expecting how important it would be. But it's one thing to get messages to remote villages so that they can learn all these new ideas. But it's just as important, if not more important, to listen to them and hear not just what they know, what works for them, what they've tried, but also what they need or what they don't need. And so we partner with organizations like UNICEF and government health ministries, the World Health Organization. And a lot of times they are pretty sure they know what people need, but they're often wrong. And so we go out there and we try to check to make sure that we've got the right messages. But when we hear people giving feedback, you know, often it's really nice feedback. It's saying, hey, I've tried this, and suddenly I'm growing more food, and all this is great. But sometimes they say, you know, you told me we shouldn't marry our daughters off when they're 14 years old. Okay, that sounds good. We actually, in our villages, we learned that a few years ago, even though it was a traditional practice. We no longer want our daughters to be married off when they're 14 or 15. But yet, it still happens. Do you want to know why? Well, lately, these days, we've got this problem of teen pregnancy. And so, yeah, when they get pregnant, then sometimes they want to get married, or sometimes we think that's the best thing. If you really want to get to the root of the problem, let's talk about teen pregnancy. Now, that's something we weren't even thinking about. And so this idea of listening to people to direct even big organizations, great organizations like UNICEF, to focus in the right areas is important. So I'll just show you, Rich brought up this device, which I didn't know he had from long ago. This one looks a little bit different from this one. So let me tell you about that. So this was the first version. And you notice it's got these arrows on it. Here's a problem that I learned was for a while, you know, people would, what this is saying is, saying, you know, press the right hand to listen to different topics. Well, when the message was going really long in some of these languages, I was like, why is it taking so long to say the right arrow? And what I learned was there's no word for arrow in a lot of these languages. There's a bow and arrow, but not like a directional arrow like you'd have on a map or something. And so what people, in trying to be helpful, they were saying, there are 4 points that look kind of similar on this device, press the one on the right. That's a really long way to get to, you know, press the right something. So we did an icon study. We had all kinds of icons that represented different things that we saw. I'd take photos of different things in villages. I'd send it off to a designer who would do a little icon representation, and then we would do studies and see how fast people could identify them. If I said, where's the tree, they'd point to something, and it wouldn't be me, it would be the translator saying that. And then we'd see how fast they'd point to it. And then from that, we ended up coming up with what were the most successful icons, but then how does it look on the device? Collecting these different icons, what do people like best? And so we would do little user focus groups and say, which one is most pleasant to you? And so that was one of the things we learned, and it's very different being in the US and, you know, thinking you know what might be right, and it worked pretty well, but it's another thing to go in and to do some really detailed studies. So we went from this to this. Last thing I'll say about technology is monitoring the data is another thing we've done a lot of lately. So we know exactly whenever someone pushes a button. Now, we don't get to see it immediately because there's no network in these places, but it's logged on the device. And when someone connects an Android phone, so most people don't have smartphones. In fact, no one has a smartphone in these villages. But when someone who is visiting one of these communities regularly, they bring an Android phone with an app that was developed by a volunteer from Apache, actually. What they can do is they can plug that into this device. It updates it with new, fresh content, and it grabs all the usage statistics and those user feedback messages that were on there and uploads it to our servers, and then we have these graphs of lots of different dashboard stuff to show what are people listening to, what are they talking about, what are the most popular messages, what villages are least engaged, and that of course is super important if you're serious about making sure people are involved in your project. So last couple things I'll just say is how to grow something like this. And how to do it the right way. So we wanted to be narrowly focused on knowledge. We wanted to be the best in the world at how can you provide knowledge that we all take for granted to people in remote communities. The issue, though, is if you want to make an impact, yeah, there's this knowledge chain of, you know, knowledge and awareness, behavior change, but there's this other stuff on the right that we were not doing. How do people have the resources? Where are the bed nets? Who's giving them that? How about any seeds or fertilizer that would be useful for the farms? How about even a buyer to buy their crops? These are all questions that these families were asking us, and we were saying, oh, yeah, that would be useful. We should probably figure that out, but should we do that? So we realized we need to partner with other organizations to do that. So we started partnering with organizations like UNICEF and agriculture organizations, and we say, you guys do the part that you do well. We're going to provide the knowledge that supports that and bring these resources and knowledge together. So we partnered with organizations like CARE and UNICEF and AGRA. And here's about how we've been scaling so far. So 10 years ago, when I gave a keynote at ApacheCon, the last time I was at ApacheCon, we were just starting. We kind of experimented with a few hundred people. So now we reach about 600,000. But we want to go a bit bigger than that. And so these are the different partners that have joined on with us. And now we're in Ghana and Kenya and Rwanda and Uganda. But we're looking at more bigger numbers. I'm not sure that our organization will reach 1 billion people in the next few years or by 2030. But the United Nations has these sustainable development goals you might have heard of. And it applies to all countries. But our focus is on these issues of poverty and health and the environment and all of these things that apply to, it applies to all of us, but how will people who have no formal education and no access to knowledge, how are they going to achieve these? So we're partnering with some big organizations to not just help us do the work we're doing, but to help others learn from what we're doing to reach the poorest 1 billion people on the planet. And so how has this changed anything? Well, we've done randomized control trials, and we've seen that 50% more mothers are sleeping under bed nets now than in the control groups. Farmers are winning awards. In fact, the woman on the right was the best soybean farmer in the entire country of Ghana. There are 28 million people in Ghana. So we were not expecting to get those kind of results. But the other farmers were growing 48% more crops. Whereas the ones who were not using the device in the same year had a 5% drop. So those are the kind of things that we have to see. Is it actually making a difference? And keep looking at that. We've actually won a couple awards, too. I've ended up meeting some interesting people in the process. And the funny thing is that, like, you know, when I was working in software, purely software, I was not, none of these folks were looking forward to meeting me. But once I started doing the thing that I was passionate about, then it's interesting who gets involved. So the very last thing I'll show you is just how it's affected some of these women around health. And so I'll let them speak for themselves.
Aho ngana yen hum india gangele ka dunu wana ko fara fufu je pam panet nem kira tundun da nya posturun e marum bebe akote anate popura popur minam kye ba minta e maru na ton ton na ale biere kya paratuma hu ma ye hu man la ta la fie atuna hotuma gare ku wala liere hne pur
en yora jakli ko otuma kantuma ye dia yal eminan kel wonla ati bibiri bere kwatro yala ti daman dola ti biye urini lan ati bana bere ka ti biye na koti piela yeso pampanet nan kela tuntundana a bere kwatro yala na so ti man dola ti biye lo ado ko mura bere kwo yalo na manyala biye ko tafan kunen gere school men o yang man yurula cho en tolom men o bala biere win win
Njora klenanzia aidia awalanzi lepo nanche liye kuben sikrinda ntia simba ne ka bibli ka onin wado banjira ale atasmo ale nanda ere abibili ma wanyera bamenga tanye na manle kara basu afera ka darwa kiera abanwa ntia ba manle tayan kanin taba menga bo biere buyibui le ananda zura asit na mbala zura asit singala nan kyalla kule kule yala dela.
Okay, so I could not have done this without a lot of Apache people, a bunch of people in this room, and I mean literally dozens of folks from Apache were supporting me very very early on. Some of it was in code. As I mentioned, we have an app that was developed by someone who heard me speak at the keynote 10 years ago. And also this audio content manager, you've got a lot of audio, but how do you tag it with all the right information and maintain it and do it in an offline environment that sometimes is connected and sometimes not? So I've had a lot of support from Apache folks through volunteering, but also even in donations. So there's an Apache member, Bill Rowe, who's been one of the many people who's been supporting, donating to this work. And he actually told me when he heard I was coming out here that he's putting up a $10,000 challenge grant. So if any of you are interested in philanthropy and any of you find this work important to you, then if you do decide to donate to this organization and help make this possible, Bill Rowe is going to match that dollar for dollar up to the first $10,000. So we actually have a Facebook campaign going on, or if you donate at our website, that'll be matched, and that's through this week of ApacheCon. So if you're curious on Facebook, you can just type in Amplio, and you'll see us there, and you'll see fundraisers, and then there's the Apache one, and we've already got some folks started. So anyway, thank you very much for your time. It's really an honor to be back at ApacheCon again, and look forward to talking to you at the reception tonight.